it's working. Okay, thank you for being my timer. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. I'm Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in program since March of 2010 and abstinent since March 8th of 2010. And I'm going to read some of our normal stuff and then I'll give my share. Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away with us and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being taped and will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. We request that two hatters, that is, OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only of their personal recovery as OA members and at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. Okay. So I'm Tammy, I'm a compulsive overeater, and I've been in program for a while. And so we're here to talk about setting boundaries and tearing down walls. And my recent recovery is really a lot about tearing down walls. So I'm going to talk about that. But at the beginning, I'm just going to tell a little bit about my story. So before coming to program, I had been a member of two nationwide programs and lost all the weight and was in what they called like long-term or whatever. And it sounded like, oh, wonderful. But I was always an all or nothing. I either didn't eat hardly at all or I ate according to a diet or I was binging like a crazy person. After coming to program, I know that I did a lot of things to make myself purge. As a teenager, I actually made myself throw up. And I'd given that up when I found what I thought was my higher power. It's still my higher power, but I let him in to the food later on. And so I had given up physically making myself throw up. But then, like 20 years later, I had been on these nationwide programs. I'd bought all these diet books. I always got a kick out of at garage sales. People would be buying my diet books and going to this work. And I always thought, well, I'm back up to my higher weights again. So no, they don't work. But we're always trying to find something else that would work. And so I kept going and going. When I finally came to program and stayed, I had visited when I was a teenager because I knew I needed something, but I didn't want to understand what everybody was talking about. The whole higher power thing was completely freaking me out. I'd find what I thought was going to be mine and is mine, but at the same time, I only understood about this much of what I was learning. And then I came back again in 2008, and I visited because I didn't really want a sponsor. Like, you shouldn't, like, I'm just going to, I can do this. It's all about me, right? I can do this. And then I had a fire in my condo complex, and I was homeless for a while. And I did have insurance, but, you know, you live in a motel, and then eventually you have to rent an apartment, and then someday you get your condo back, but it took a long time. And it was, like, everything that I knew was normal changed into completely craziness. And I had had 8 days of not eating sugar. But it was, again, all about me. There was no sponsor. There was no anything. And it was all about me. And I was going to control it all. Well, of course, that didn't work. And so then after the fire, I moved into a different place. And about a year and a half later, I fell down my basement steps and dislocated and broke my ankle to the point that it was really horrible. I was out of work for 3.5 weeks. I had surgery in order to put lots of plates and pins in it to keep it back together again. And luckily, I can do anything that I want to do now. But at the time, it was, are you kidding? Like, what am I supposed to do? The other part was that I was on pain medicines at the beginning that made me not really want to eat. But I liked those pain meds. And I came up from a family of lots and lots of alcoholics. And so I knew that that was, I chose purposely that that was not my drug of choice. Man, those painkillers were good. And I wasn't hungry. This could be cool. But there was other awful side effects. And so I did not stay on those. But even trying to get off Tylenol, it took me twice to get off the Tylenol because I ended up being on Tylenol all of November, December, and part of January. And finally, in February, I got off. Like, it seems silly, but it was just, I was in so much pain. And I did go back to work part-time and then full-time, but I hadn't been able to binge either. because I literally had to have people taking care of me for those first 3 weeks when I was stuck at home and not being able to do anything. And so they were the ones providing my food and doing everything for me. I didn't have my stashes of food all over my house where I could find all my foods and binge and all of that kind of things. So it was so challenging. And so then when I finally had permission to start driving again, because it was my right leg, and I started driving, I was just an all-out crazy person. I was binging like crazy. And my last binge, I had had an enormous amount of meal and snacks and ice cream. And then finally, I literally couldn't go to bed because I had so much food in me that I knew that I was going to get sick. Well, then I couldn't get sick, so I finally made myself throw up. And it had been almost 20 years since I had made myself do that. And I literally heard my higher power screaming at me, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And then once I did, it was all over. And I cried for days. Everybody still thought it was because I was still trying to get off the painkillers and the Tylenol. Nobody had any idea how bad it was. I had also not gotten a position at work that I had really, really wanted. And the reality was, you know, higher power knew better. I shouldn't have had that position. But that's just what I wanted. And so I was a mess. And so I came into the OA rooms for the third time to finally come and stay. And I came in, and the first meeting that I went to, they didn't have any sponsors available. Nobody raised their hands. And I went, oh, what am I going to do? So I went back the next week. And the next week, one person raised their hand, and I pounced on her. And literally, she only had like 90 days of abstinence. And I didn't care. I just needed somebody to tell me what to do. And so I started there with, I told her all my trigger foods, or what I thought they were. You know, cookies, brownies, ice cream, all of the sugary things. And she's like, let's call all of that sugar. And I went, oh, okay. So I gave up that, and then I had a few other things that I knew for sure were my trigger foods. I had read enough about it. I'd been listening. I just didn't want to come and stay. And so when I finally did, I was like, okay. And I jumped full force in. And I did whatever my sponsor told me to do. We did the 30 questions in around 30 days. It wasn't quite that good. But I worked really hard on those, and I started working the steps. And it's completely changed my life. I was really scared along the way when I started getting to what weight I thought that I should be at, that I couldn't maintain that because I had been in these two other nationwide programs and I had maintained for them, but I'd always gained it all back. And I didn't know how I was not going to do that again. But the steps are how you don't do that again. So I've worked the steps multiple times. And the first time I worked the steps, and this is where I start leading into our actual topic, which is setting boundaries and tearing down walls. So the first time I started going through the steps, I really thought about all of the resentments that I had. And my fourth step was long. I still have it. It's really quite funny. And so pretty much what I thought, I wrote every person that I knew in my whole life. I felt that way, that I wrote every person I knew in my life because I resented all of them for everything. Not you people. I didn't know most of you yet. But I had this huge list, and I did it chronologically like my whole life. And so it was unbelievable. For me, it was a lot like taking off a backpack. And so all those resentments, and part of this is tearing down walls, but I'm going to use a different analogy. I had this gigantic backpack. You know, the across the road, I'm going to live in the wilderness for years. No, you know. All of these resentments were holding me down. And then as I kept working through the steps and I got to my eight and nine and I started giving them away or making my amends to different people, and I had done my fifth step with my sponsor, and I'd learned where my parts were in the whole situation, my backpack started getting smaller. And then I just had my regular day pack, you know, that I could go hiking during the day. And then gradually I just had like a little pack, you know, just maybe my water, but not much else in it. And then eventually it was just like my purse. And then eventually, all of those resentments got down to, you don't really need to hold on to them anymore. A lot of it was, I was holding on to things about other people. I was holding other people's resentments that weren't even my resentments. I was holding other people's that I wasn't even in the situation, but I was mad at them because they were mean to them. It was crazy. And so really tearing down all of those walls or getting rid of all of those resentments until I don't carry them anymore. I work really hard at not keeping my current ones, too. Now, there are days when I do something wrong or somebody does something wrong to me, but I really work hard at going back and talking to those people really quickly and not letting those fester. It can, and they still occasionally happen, but it's a lot easier than it used to be. With boundaries, mostly I had a lot of boundaries around my food at the beginning. I really was careful about my trigger foods and my trigger behaviors. I had a stash of food everywhere. I had food hidden from me. Like, why do I need to hide food under my bed? Nobody lives in my bedroom, except me. So, but I still had stashes everywhere, and so I got rid of a lot of those things. I do now currently have a healthy food in my car, in my little console, because I know that there are days that I need a snack or something where my day gets messed up. And so I can also stop though now and like buy an apple. Imagine that. You don't have to go to fast food places. But I now have like, and I have my own thing, so you can ask me later if you want to know what it is, but that I can have if something happens. Wednesday night, for example, I usually have a snack on Wednesday night because I have a prayer group. But I really wasn't hungry. I was not physically hungry. I didn't want to eat my snack at that time. But then I was driving home, and rain, for some reason, in Missouri makes people drive slow. So it took me 40 minutes instead of 10 to get home. And so I had my snack instead because I was really hungry. And I knew if otherwise I got home and I had to still cook what I planned to eat, it was going to be forever and I was going to be starving by then. And so I had my snack on my way home instead. The boundaries with people, a lot of it was getting rid of all of those resentments. I had some boundaries and I didn't have other boundaries. I was completely a people pleaser. While I'm bold and I will tell you what I think, I wouldn't always follow through. I would set a boundary and then change my mind and not do it. And I would set a different boundary. And then when they walked all over it, I would be like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't have set that boundary. And so a lot of it was really talking through with my sponsor and with other OA members of where do these boundaries need to be and how do I keep them? And that's still challenging for me, and I still work on that, but it's something that's coming better. My tearing down walls is the biggest part. So my first time through the steps was really learning to trust my higher power. So going back to kind of the beginning of my story, I learned my higher power back when I was a teenager, but at the same time, I kept him in a little box. And he could have just about everything besides the food. I wasn't giving up that food. And I kept that control over food, or what I thought was controlling that food. In reality, the food was controlling me. And so coming to program that first time was really opening up. And I have a surrender movement where it's raising it up and leaving it there. All of the craziness. Lift up the food, leave it there. The people in your life that drive you crazy. Lifting it up and leaving it there. Gradually, I realized that, I was still playing with it. So lifting it up and leaving there, and don't pull the string. Because I was still trying to adjust it, even though I thought I had given it away. I was still trying to play with it. So gradually, my higher power has not just been in the box. And occasionally, I put him back in the box. But I try to let him be everywhere now. And that's a big difference. So the first time through my steps, I was really focused on getting rid of those resentments, learning to trust my higher power. I've since gone through much more times. The next time I went through the steps, and it just personally, it works for me. I went back through with other focuses then. So my second focus was on body image and what I looked like. I'm currently going through a lot of old pictures and putting them on electronically. And what I thought was a big girl was not always a big girl. And part of it was just lots of interactions with other people and what they said or what their opinions were. And those mattered to me back then. And now I can look at pictures and go, no, that's not what it was like. Or, yeah, that was a pretty rough time. Majority of the time that I was a bigger person, I didn't let anybody take my picture. It's pretty funny that a lot of times I get trouble because people are like, we have no pictures of you. And I'm like, well, there's a reason. I wouldn't let you take any. The third time through the steps, I really focused on codependency. It was all about OA, but was focusing on that, how I was trying to people please everybody else and how that part of me was trying to always play with other things, and I didn't want to focus on that. The fourth time was just general, but also focused on the traditions. And the traditions are so important to walk through, and they really help with the rest of life. And that's where you can really learn how to set those boundaries and things too. That's where the foundation can be. It's still very difficult when you have people in your life who aren't healthy, so people who aren't in 12-step. And so I still have to figure out how to walk that line with people who aren't in steps and 12-step, but I've learned how to set those boundaries and work with people who are in 12-step, and then it helps me practice how to set those boundaries and do things with people who are not healthy or not in 12-step. My current time through the steps, now I'm working on men. And so when I first started working on it, I thought it was going to be still about all the bad men and some of those resentments that I was holding on to the first time. But my higher power was like, no, that's not where you need to focus. That first time, like I said, I thought I had a list of every person I knew. And I really didn't. I'm still learning to trust. I first was learning to trust God. Then I was learning to trust a lot of other people. But this time through, I'm really learning to trust men and other people now, too. That there were a lot of wonderful, great people in my life. And so this time through, I'm actually making lists of the wonderful people in my life, and mostly men, and really thinking about that. So now here's where the tearing down the walls comes a lot better. So I still see a counselor. I don't see her as regularly as I did when I first came to program. But I tend to see her about issues. And so one of my issues is still men. And so I'm going to tell you an analogy that she helps me with, especially with tearing down walls. So majority of the time, I either had what I call a number five, a concrete reinforced brick, all the steel reinforcement wall. And everybody was either, I didn't like you at all, and you can't talk to me at all, or it was all the way down at the floor, which is a zero, and I let them walk right in and do anything they wanted. And I only had that or that, and I had no in-betweens. And she was like, well, wait a minute, can't there be levels? And so literally tearing down those walls. And so now what I've been doing is I really have a list of people, especially men, that I have like that 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And so another comparison is like my house or where I live. I am still not a person that's going to invite you over. Don't expect it, because it's really not going to happen. I'm getting better. You know, a few more people have been in my house than other times. But so 5 can be like, they know I live in Missouri. You know, 4 can be like, yeah, they can know I live in the St. Louis area. 3 could be like, I live in St. Charles. But St. Charles is not just a city, it's a county, it's huge, you don't really know where I live. 2 can be that I live near 5th Street and Highway 70. And then 1 can be my neighborhood or one part of my house, because my parents are elderly and they live with me and they have part of the house and I have part of the house. And then 0 is actually, you can be in my part of the house. Part of this also helps because there are still some of those people that are relatives that I don't really like. They can be in 1 in mom and dad's part of the house, but they can't be in 0 in my part of the house. And so really learning to tear down those walls and not just look at those negative people in your life, but look at those positive people in your life and where they are. So when I started this list, I really expected most of them to be a 5 or a 0, because that's just how my brain works. But at the same time, I have a lot more levels than I thought I did. I'd worked through a lot more of those resentments than I thought I did. A lot more people were 0 or 1s than I thought they were. There are still those 2 and 3s. But then I also have another little saying called my creepometer. I have a little creepometer where when I first came to program, I didn't trust my instincts. I had been taught as a child, again, growing up with a lot of people who are alcoholics, it warps how you think. And so a lot of times, my creepometer would go off, and then I had someone tell me, oh, that's your relative. So technically, you're supposed to like your relatives. Well, luckily, you don't have to. But so my creepometer would go off, but yet I didn't know why or what was going on. And so sometimes, it can still be that 5 with those people. I don't know why it's going off. It's okay, though, and I can trust that now. Sometimes it's that 4 or 3, and that's okay, too. But a lot more people are those 2 ones and 0s than I thought there were. And it's truly amazing. So really working through the steps is what my biggest thing for you is, just to keep working the steps. It works for me to go on different topics and keep going through. Sometimes I start and I have no idea why I'm doing the steps again or what I'm focused on. I just know I need to, and then I find out. I call myself an onion. And that God's doing these little onion layers, you know. I hate cutting onions, but when you do cut onions, and sometimes you have to peel a little layer, there's tons and tons of little layers. I know I'm not done yet. I know that God's still peeling back those onion layers. I still have times, though, that I relax and go, okay, I don't need my onion layers moved right now. But then I go back and work again and keep working it over and over and over again. I still do my daily 10, 11, 12 where I'm still working on those things. But I don't have to have everybody at a 5 or a 0 anymore. I don't have to hold on to my giant backpack or my smaller backpack. I don't need those things anymore. And for me, that's what's so important. Figuring out how to make those healthy boundaries, but working with other people to help you make those healthy boundaries and then stick to them. That people-pleasing part is still in there, but I also can be bold and firm when I need to be, and I have to use that part of me to help when I need to. So, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to open for sharing in a minute. I'm going to read the sharing guidelines. Please stick to the topic of the meeting. Anyone wishing to share, please line up at the right of the podium and step... Oh, there's no mic. Step up to this little thingy. When it is your turn, pitches are limited to 3 minutes to allow as many people to share as possible. Speaking implies your release to the taping or to our recording of this item. And then just a reminder, if you don't want your name, use a fictitious name. Okay, we're open.
This will pick up the sound. Hi, I'm Cindy, and I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm delighted to be here. I wasn't really planning to come to this session, and I'm so glad I did. I like the image of the backpack, because mine's always been a hefty trash bag. And the stuff inside's pretty slimy, you know, when you start dragging it out and getting rid of it. And I'm so glad I don't really carry any kind of a trash bag with me anymore, because I do my cleanup on a daily basis. But the other one, the walls, that was a great imagery. And I'm going to just tell a quick story. I have a childhood friend that came back into my life a few years ago. And I have no instant boundaries unless you've got the creepometer thing. But if otherwise, I like you and I'm just going to move into your space. You know, you're going to be my best friend, or we're at least going to be friendly, or you're going to, you know, I don't stop to think that the other person may have boundaries. So this friend of mine, we'd been childhood friends. What I remembered about her was pleasant. We played together. We went to high school dances together. It was always great. She lived with me for a little while. You know, it was great. So she had moved to a state nearby, and I said, I'll come down and visit you for a week, because she'd stayed with me for several days. That had gone well. I had no bells or whistles going off. And a friend of mine had a relative close by, so we drove down and I stayed with my friend. By the end of that week, I knew that there was something wrong. I just didn't know what I had done that was wrong. And we got in the car for her to take me back, and she said, you are not welcome in my life. You are not welcome in my life until you go figure out what the hell is wrong with you. Well, I just was devastated, because I had done nothing with her different than what I do with all of you. And of course you guys have to accept me, I think. Anyway, so I came home and I did a lot of crying and I did a lot of soul searching, and I did come up with, obviously I was intrusive. I was just intrusive. I offered my opinion. I offered my suggestions. You know, I just was intrusive. So I made an amends. I wrote her a note. She wrote me back and she said, you know, I'm in a really bad place. I want to just forget that ever happened, and let's continue to be friends. And so we chatted a little between now and then, and then she contacted me and she said, my mother's taken care of now and I'd like to just come. Can I come and just stay with you for a few weeks? You know, I'll pay you rent, whatever, but I just need to kind of reacclimate myself. So we agreed to that. Seemed like a great idea. She stayed. That all seemed like a great idea. Then we went somewhere together. And on the way home, she said, I really don't like you. And I thought, I invited you to go to something I thought was fun. You agreed. You could have said no. Now you're telling me this is my fault somehow. But the good news here isn't about that relationship. That relationship will continue, but it'll continue differently. Because now, instead of there being no threshold, I'm not going to assume that I'm welcome. I'm going to step back. Because the only reason she was able to hurt me was because I assumed that she was able to have a relationship at the level that I'm able to have a relationship with another person. And obviously she's not. And I need to understand and respect that. So if people kind of do this, I need to respect that they actually have a personal space that they don't want me in. And I think that's a great thing for me to learn. Because when you're a zero person, I'm like a puppy. Hey, I'm here for the party, and I'm here to love all of you, and you're going to all love me. And sometimes we're just prickly together, you know? And so I need to learn that it doesn't always work that way. So for me, I really love the wall thing, because I'm going to start looking at, is it a picket fence, you know, or is it the wall that we've all been hearing about lately? So with that, thanks.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thanks, Cindy.
We're open for sharing.
I am Meg. I'm a food and sugar addict.
Hi, Maggie.
Thank you so much, Tammy. I just loved all the visuals and just really talking about boundaries and how important it is and how my view of boundaries and how I participate or don't or allow or whatever changes as I become more clear in my program. And it just really made me think, because I'm a two-timer in this program, when I was in OA Part 1, I had friends. In fact, there was one woman I met in program, and, you know, we got along famously, and it was, you know, love at first sight and all that, you know, and, oh, we're going to be friends forever and so on. And then we both got out of the food, and things changed. And then several years went by. We were still both in the food, and we became, you know, started up, rekindled the friendship. And I really just started seeing some things that didn't work for me and, you know, seeing things that I did that didn't work for me or work for her. And I ended up, you know, wanting to talk about that. And I had said something, we set a date, we're going to talk, and I shared my concerns because she was a person that didn't really like to share, which was great for me because I'm an extrovert, so I could share and share and share and share. And she could listen and listen and listen and listen. And we had done this dance before and talked about it and so on. And I said, I realize I do this, but I really want you to participate more. And I'm going to be quiet more, and I want this and so on and whatever. And then I just talked about what I would like to see and so on. And I said, you know, what are your thoughts? And we had set a time a couple weeks prior to that, you know, about doing this. And she goes, well, frankly, I haven't thought about it at all. And that just really took my breath away because it was very obvious. She just wasn't going to participate in that realm of the friendship or whatever. So at that point, I thought, you know, it's just really time to end this again. And so I wrote her a letter and just thanking her for all the things in life and so on. And she wrote me a letter back and said, well, I can't help but take this personally. I don't know why this won't work. And I was so confused. And what's interesting, I ended up coming back to program later that year. And I've had many years to think about it. And it's interesting, I ran into a friend of hers that I had met along the way, and we, you know, I got a little update on her and so on, because I think about her now and then and hope that life is good. But really realizing that I don't want to open that door again, and really seeing in the past there's been several women in my life that I've just, you know, friends with that it didn't work, and then we had our space and then came back together again and it didn't work. And there was a time that a third, you know, one person wanted to try it yet a third time. And it's like, I met with her because I knew I needed to make some amends, because that's how I look at when all of a sudden someone out of the blue connects me. It's kind of like, okay, radar's up. It's like, all right, beep, 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 beep. Oh, yeah, that's it. And we talked and so on, but it's like I don't want to do that dance anymore. I don't want to have to relearn that lesson or learn it deeply. So I appreciate it because, and I like the fact that you've worked the steps again with different things. And I mean, I've done that, but there was one thing you brought up that I'm like, oh yeah, well, the receptor lights went off, ding. So it's like, yeah, all right, you know, it's like, all right, you can stay there now. And so I appreciate it, but I really look at my growth in this program and the fact that I like the levels of the wall. It's kind of like, how aware am I with mine and with others giving them theirs, but that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And so, anyway, that I pass.
Thanks, May.
Thanks, May.
What's this thing hanging on my neck? Okay. Good morning, I'm Christina, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Christina.
I love the talk, and thank you very much. I came in here thinking, well, I probably need to know something about boundaries. And obviously, I need to know a lot about boundaries. And I was, and thank you for the shares that came before mine. I was thinking about, you know, I lived a life in which I had a lot of fear of intimacy and a lot of yearning for intimacy, and those things were sort of in equal measure. And I dealt with that by choosing people who I could do all the yearning for, but I already knew there was not going to be intimacy because they had a lot of barriers up. So that leads to a lot of hurt, which confirms that intimacy is a scary, bad thing, because obviously, look, and yet I still really, really wanted it. And in an odd circle, which in my disease always happens, I mean, my disease is pretty much just a bunch of, you know, insulated circles, I ended up 60 years later in the same position I started in. Somebody who really, really wanted intimacy, understood that I should not have it because it's so disappointing, being able to foretell how bad it was going to be. And this is in not just my deep relationships, but even in the casual ones. So, you know, that leads to isolation and the confirmation that you're not going to be doing it well. And the whole thing is kind of a soup that just gets thicker and thicker and thicker. And it's, you know, and I just keep eating the soup, and it just does not sustain me. And that the whole, it's just a difficult life to lead and a difficult life to live, to leave. And I recognized in here the need for honesty. And that was the first step I took towards letting go of both all of these barriers as opposed to boundaries, and beginning to see that there might be some way I could live life a little differently, construct it just a little to the left of what I was doing. And in here, people that I really didn't know, but that I've been more honest with than I have been with the people I have sought intimacy with, I began to not only hear, but actually see reflected in them an idea that I was actually who I thought I was, something I had not before. I was always, whatever was projected out there was not really the interior me. And now I was beginning to have people see me in the way that I kind of think I am, flawed, and yet smiling. So that's good. That's a great first step. And you know, and now if I were to say to an OA friend or acquaintance, oh yeah, yeah, I really want to do that, I'm probably not going to show up for it, I'm going to forget, but I really want to do it. They go, yeah, you know, I get that, because, you know, we all forget, because that's so easy to avoid it then. All of those kind of crazy thoughts that are my most sustained habits, they're my biggest truths. It's like, yeah, and even if it's not their thing, they go, I know what you're talking about, though. You know, and I feel like that's been such a burden when you were talking about letting go. It's been such a relief to understand that I could be my flawed self. And while that still may not be the most pleasant thing in the world, nobody's looking at me thinking, you're an animal we don't understand. You're not a person that we could possibly figure out. We don't understand anything you're talking about. And so what I'm grateful for today is not that I have great boundaries, because I hardly know what they are still, But then I have fewer barriers in these rooms, and practicing letting go of these barriers and being my authentic self in here for, you know, a few minutes at a time, of course, nothing sustained, helps me walk outdoors and have just breathe a little easier. And the very relationships that I have loved and relied upon and chosen extremely unwisely, but now are part of my core self, have begun to release a little. Because just me being less afraid and less bound up with nothing else happening is actually affecting a change. And it gives me room to live. Just a little room. And I have hope, because I think that the little space that I have created, accidentally, I came in here to lose weight, no doubt, accidentally, that gift has become, I hope, a space in which I can continue to grow. So this boundary idea is a really good one. Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Louise. No, I'm Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Compulsive overeater. I have something to say, but I don't know what it is. Boundaries. Never had any. Like Christina, didn't know what they were. Even when I'd hear the word, I wasn't sure. I thought it had something to do with a physical geography class, and so I stopped listening. But I had a lot of barriers, a lot of walls. Starting when I was very little, and there was some difficulty in the home where I grew up, and it's old news, but at around 2 or 2.5 years old, I said to myself, they'll never see me cry. And that created a wall that got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and I couldn't see me cry, and they couldn't see me cry. And so what I created was a person with no boundaries, but a person who couldn't be authentic. No one knew who I was. I didn't know who I was. And so the protection of the wall is you can't get in because you might make me feel something. You might hurt me. You might disappoint me. You might make me cry, blah, 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 blah. And so you're never going to really know me, but I'm the consummate people pleaser at the same time. Because even though I'm not letting you know me, I sure as hell would like it if you liked me. And that's a terrible situation to be in for 60 years or so. And I've only learned that because of this program. And so I've learned in this program, as someone else has already said, those walls or those barriers are getting smaller and they're getting more realistic and they have proportion now, like you described in your 5 to 0. Because they should have proportion. They shouldn't be one size fits all, because one size fits all was nothing. Just cut the world off and then we isolate. Because if I can't, someone else said this. I have decided to go to someone's party or do this or that, and I'm really all enthusiastic, and I put it on my calendar, and I think about it, and the closer I get to the day, the less I'm able to actually fulfill that obligation. And I think I've let some people down by doing that. I know I've let myself down over and over and over by just at the last minute putting on the brakes and screeching away and not participating in my own life. I'm learning about boundaries. I have a person in my life right now around whom I'm learning to create some boundaries and have been ever since I walked in the doors of this program. And those boundaries are surprisingly so effective and so kind and so loving that I'm astonished, because I didn't know that boundaries and loving were the same thing or could be the same thing. I thought boundaries were, I'm looking after me and the hell with you. And that's not what it is at all. It's, I'm looking after myself because I love you. And it's entirely different. Not because I don't love myself, because that's what I tried first. I'm looking after myself because I love you, but I don't love you, and so the boundary isn't going to work, and we know it's not going to work. I'm going to change my mind. I'm inconsistent. But now I can set boundaries because I love me, and I love this other person in my life. and it's really transformative. It's hard to set boundaries at first. It's the frickin' most uncomfortable thing in the world. It's awful. It feels like bad. I'm a bad person. And so this program has promised me that that's not true. This program has promised me that there's a different outcome, and what we said last night. What did we say? Oh, the old Chinese proverb: if you don't change direction, you'll end up where you're headed. And so that's my slogan for the weekend. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol. Would anybody else like to do a good?
Hi, I'm Scheherazade.
Hi, Scheherazade.
Or Pat. I guess I just really want to talk about the fact that I don't really recognize that you're supposed to have boundaries. You know, I mean, I have friends in the program that will say to me, oh, well, you don't have to do that. Oh, like, really? Really? Somebody told me to do it, so I was going to do it at the expense of whatever. So it's good for me to hear your levels of boundaries and to really try to internalize that. I mean, you just want to be this good girl. You know, I just want to do what I'm told. And I never do what I'm told, really, but I just whine and bitch about it afterwards. So it's not like I'm so nice that I'll just do whatever you think. I'll do whatever you think, but then, boy, I'm going to hate you later. You know? And then, funny, but I'm hungry then. You know? So I don't really have a lot to say. It's just that I learned so much from all of this. It's just amazing to me. You know, the littlest things that are just so subtle that you don't think are big things that we really all just get to learn here. And it's just amazing. I even in the conference, I'm supposed to be somewhere at 5:00, and my friend's saying, well, why? Because I was told to be there. Oh, okay, so you're not going to have dinner? No, I'm busy. You know, so I'm learning baby steps at a time, and I'm really happy to be here, and your talk was great. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dee, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Dee.
And I learned something. I'm sorry we got in here late. Thought we were in the right room. And well, anyway. Okay, I learned something from what each of you said. And I, too, that crying situation, my mother told me when I was young that I was ugly when I cried. And so I completely thought then that was I would never cry again, ever in front of her or anybody, because the last thing I wanted to be was ugly. It was like, gee whiz, I don't have much going for me. We have very little money, and so it's like, I've got to have something to hold on to. And I never knew about setting boundaries until just a few years ago, and even now I really don't know how to get started with it, but it was good to hear some of what you said about some people are either down here or way up there. So the fact is that I never thought about that. Some people, I heard Cindy talk there about I don't know how to summarize, but that they just don't want that, us to invade their boundaries. So our daughter and son-in-law moved, and grandson moved to Florida, and we live in Quincy, and so it's so far away. But I was that kind of, you know, everybody come over, have fun type of thing, and I don't think he is at all. And so it's created some huge problems, and now they won't even speak with me, and it came over money. And let's see, I think Carol might have said that you intend to follow through with something and then you don't at the, or Meg, I'm not sure who said that, at the last minute, and that's me, because they wanted us to invest in this business endeavor, and 3 weeks into it, I said no, and when I told them, our son-in-law got so angry, it was like World War III right then, and so they won't speak with me. He said, no cards, no letters, no visits, never step foot on their property, him on mine, and it's like, I don't know where to go with that. It's devastating. And I, too, kind of like Cindy, went home and thought, what did I, you know, well, I know what I did do, and I've got to be honest. I vacillated. I said yes, then I said no, then I said yes, and finally I said no. So, to the business deal. I did not want a relationship based with them on money. All I wanted was family. And I don't know how to tell them that. I tried then to say I did not want intermingling of family finances. I did not say to them that in my parents' family or in in-laws' family, money was never shared. They had theirs, we had ours. The other set had theirs, we had ours. I don't know how to do that and still maintain a loving relationship. So I'm lost in this bitter morass, I guess. Thank you all for listening, and I'm glad we're here.
Thanks,
Jean. You're welcome.
Does anybody else want to share? If not, we'll wrap up so we can figure out where we're going to go next. Okay. Let's see if we can make a big circle, and we'll do serenity prayer.
When you work.